I've done a lot of Himalayan peaks, mostly kind of trekking peaks, working for a trekking company.
Okay.
In 1991, I tried Pumori in winter. Pumori is one of Everest's neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest one I've climbed is Everest in 2005.
Who climbed Everest?
From the Tibetan side, yeah. I actually took a paraglider out there with a view to flying off. I took a Yeti out there.
Mm.
But the conditions that year were really bad, so very, very strong winds. And we only climbed... what happens when you climb Everest is you wait for what is called a weather window. When the monsoon passes over northern India, it displaces the jet stream winds off the top of Everest.
Mm-hmm.
And you get periods of like 3 or 4 days where the top of the mountain isn't buffeted by the jet stream winds. So you try and choose those times to climb the mountain. And those periods didn't really happen in spring 2005. We just got the odd day here and there. So flying off wasn't really an option. It was too risky.
Mm. So but did you take your glider to the top?
No, I took it up to Camp 1 at 7,100 metres and then took it down again. when I was climbing Amma Diglam in November, there was a team of French, French guys and gals who were going to fly off Amma Diglam. They had paragliders, had kind of mountain chutes.
Mm-hmm.
And their Vuor wings, very lightweight wings. Anyway, they climbed the mountain without their paragliders for kind of acclimatisation and check things out. And then they waited out for the weather to change, and it was just very, very windy, and they bailed out eventually, so that they didn't fly off.
Mm.
I don't really know much about... I've only flown a speed wing 4 times now.
Right, and that was your fourth flight?
I've flown the Yak twice. The first flight on the Yak, it's a new wing, so I actually received it the day before I left.
Yeah.
And I took it into a field just to kind of, you know, ground handle it and see what it was like, and it seemed fine.
Yeah.
And I had one short flight, like a 5-minute flight from one of the passes when we were walking into Amma Diglam.
Yeah.
I obviously wanted to fly before I took it on the mountain.
Yeah.
And it seemed to be fine, so I had no worries about the wing. But yeah, I'm a beginner flyer with regards to speed flying.
Wow. And so what was the... but you do paraglide, don't you, or not?
I've been flying for 22 years.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
And what was the flight like then?
Too short.
Was it?
Yeah, I mean, if you saw on the video, the winds on the top were really, really changeable. I think I was getting kind of it was coming from the northwest, so it wasn't totally clean air. It was coming up the kind of northwest face, and there's the northwest ridge, and I think it was kind of rotating around the ridge.
Yeah.
So the wind that I was getting on the summit was kind of chopping and changing, you know, up to about 180 degrees, so... You know, sometimes I'm holding the wing towards the north, other times I'm holding towards the south, and it's getting buffeted around quite a lot. So, yeah, there's a lot of gusts, and the wind is obviously very strong. I don't know how strong it was. It's hard to kind of gauge. I know that if I had a paraglider, I wouldn't have got it out of the bag. It was way too windy for that.
Yeah.
Just holding the wall would have been quite hard. And the top of Amma Diglam is... There's a large enough flat area for laying out your glider.
Yeah.
Takeoff is fantastic. It's like a convex slope. So you've got plenty of space to get your glider in the air, have a look at the glider, make sure it's okay, and a couple of steps off, and then it's kind of big air time.
What's it like when you step off? I mean, are you straight over a big face, or because you come down the locket of the glacier of Amma Diglam, don't you?
That's exactly it, yeah. You come right over the Diglam, it's called, yeah. So yeah, it's big air straight away. Really. You've got probably 1,500, 2,000 metres under your feet.
Yeah.
It's spectacular, isn't it? It's just amazing.
And how fast are you going as soon as you take off? You must be going very fast because you're very high.
Yeah, I say it's very hard to gauge the speed.
But you're zooming around. And you just went straight down. Were you making turns up there? Were you sort of soaring the face?
I was going backwards and forwards across the face. I made a decision to put my camera away. I mean, I take lots of photographs from the air.
Yeah.
Normally. But on this time, I decided to put my camera away, concentrate on the flying. You know, I'm not used to flying a speed wing for a start, so
yeah.
You know, just concentrate on getting down safely. That was the priority, really.
Yeah.
There's a guy who climbed up at the same time as me, who took the video, took most of the video from the summit. I had left a small video camera at the bottom for somebody to record my descent.
Yeah.
And then there was somebody halfway up on the ridge who was also videoing.
Yeah.
So on the video that you saw, there was kind of bits and bobs. There's three different kind of viewing positions. But yeah, I wish I actually kept my camera out, because I could have flown hands off all the way down and got some great shots of people climbing up and doing wing airs with the mountain behind. It would have been absolutely superb.
Awesome. You have to go back and do it again. Get the photos.
Next time.
And is it? I mean, it's quite a technical, but mountain to climb, isn't it, Amber Dublam?
The climbing, yeah, it is. The climbing's pretty technical, for a kind of a seasoned mountaineer, it's not that hard. The hardest part is there's a thing called the Yellow Tower, which goes up to Camp 2.
Yeah.
And if you free climb that, it'll be about hard VS if you know about climbing.
Yeah, yeah. But at altitude, I mean, in
your 6,000 metres, yeah, so it's quite an undertaking.
Yeah.
But the exposure on the ridge is absolutely fantastic. The rock is pretty solid, it's granite. There's not much suspect rock around, but you've got this amazing exposure. You've got, a good 1,000 metres either side of you, or pretty much all the time, and on this knife edge ridge, it's a fantastic route.
So how long was your total top to bottom, do you think?
10 minutes.
10 minutes? Exactly. And what's the height?
The descent is 2,300 metres. It gives you 3.8 metres per second of descent.
Yeah. I've never flown them, but I've heard that the speed wings are quite tricky to land to get it right. Was it okay?
Obviously what I found, I'd flown a Bobcat in the lakes. I had two flights on a Bobcat, and it was a little bit surprised. They come in really fast, but then as soon as you put the brake on, it converts very well, and it glides for ages. That was the thing that kind of caught me out. I actually flared too early on Amateur Dublam. You can probably see I flare quite high.
Yeah.
Just because I'm kind of scared of the speed. And,
but it
does convert very well. And if you get it right, your landing is fantastic. It's great.
Yeah. No, I thought your landing looked really good, all things considered.
I could have always eking out a bit, get a bit lower, really.
Yeah. So have you got plans to go back and do some more speed flying in the big mountains?
No, I'm actually thinking about the Alps. I mean, there's loads of peaks I'd like to climb in the Alps. I've done quite a lot around the Chamonix area and a couple of Swiss peaks, but one ambition was the Aigle Vert, which has a nice kind of takeoff. So you kind of, we sell one of the easy routes up there and fly off the top, and that'd be really good.
Yeah, brilliant. Do you think that's the first time it's been done? Speed riding.
Certainly with a speed rider, yeah. I think it's only the second descent of Amateur Dublam by aerial descent.
You think it's only the second descent by aerial descent?
I've searched the internet for ages and ages and can't find any reference whatsoever. But speaking to all the locals, I've asked in all the kind of local tea shops that we stayed in and our local guides, the Sherpas, they tell me that one guy, possibly a Swiss guy, possibly an Austrian, flew off a few years ago, and that's the only record that I've come across.
Wow.
So it seems like, anecdotally, the second descent.
Amazing. I thought it had been flown off, right at the beginning.
So did I. It's just a perfect summit to take off.
Yeah.
The normal situation would be you'd get your valley wind, and I think that would come up the southwest face, so that would be absolutely perfect. That's what I was counting on. And all the photographs of the summit that I've seen, all the prayer flags on the summit, seem to suggest that the wind's been blowing, from the southwest.
Yeah.
So that's why I was kind of confident of having the wind in the right direction. So it's a bit tricky. Had I gone up the day before or the day after, I couldn't have flown. The wind was far too strong. There was snow blowing off the tops. And,
was it?
We had a pretty rough season. It was kind of unseasonably windy this year.
And how long were you out there for?
I did a trek first of all. I did a three-week trek, which was great for acclimatization.
Yeah.
And then I spent about 10 days at base camp.
Yeah.
Climbing the mountain and such like.
Oh, that's
good. My round trip was 27 hours.
Was it? Well,
if you go with a commercial group, it's a 5-day round trip normally.
Bloody hell. So you just shut up and...
I went up to Camp 2. I missed out Camp 1. I missed out Advanced Base Camp. I went up to Camp 2 at 6,000 metres, then from Camp 2 to the top.
And what's Camp 2.9? What was Camp 2.9, that little in your video?
Right, Camp 2.9 is called 2.9 because it replaced Camp 3. Camp 3 was wiped out in 2006 by a snow avalanche. There'd been heavy snowfall, and the avalanche started above the Dublam, and it came down during the night, apparently. Tim Mosdell, the guy that I was with, he was there at the time, they were at base camp.
Yeah.
So the avalanche swept over the top of the Dublam. It might have triggered Serac Fall as well, they don't really know.
Yeah.
But it basically wiped out Camp 3, which was on the top of a flat bit of glacier to the right of the Dublam as you look at the mountain.
Mm.
So nowadays, 2.9 is situated on underneath that kind of that glacier, they basically hacked out a platform out of the side of the glacier, so it's kind of safe from stuff falling from above. Tim Merrifield leads commercial groups. He takes a group every year to Amandaban.
Right.
And Tim Merrifield was my summit partner on Everest in 2005, so he's a mate of mine.
Okay.
So I just tagged onto his permit.
Yeah.
And did my own thing, really. I used their base camp services. I used their tent on the mountain.
Yeah.
Everything was set up. By the time I got there, the camps were in place. All I could do was kind of climb up
yeah.
and fly off, and it was easy for me.